What's the fastest way you've seen someone their life? Story 1. I knew a guy in high school I will call Josh. He was pretty smart, a bit of a troublemaker, and he and I had been in the same classes for years. About 1 or 2 years after we graduated, Josh went to a college party. At this party, he went up to a guy sleeping on a couch and struck him on the head with a bat or a pipe. I cannot remember. I still have no idea why he did this, but alcohol was involved. The guy did not survive, and Josh ran off. Before Josh could be arrested, he ended his own life. Even worse, his best friend also ended his life about a week later, another guy I had known for years. That guy's mother wrote a letter to the local paper, explaining that her son had no connection to the incident at that party. Most everyone already knew this, but I can understand her not wanting people to associate her son with what happened. The whole thing was pretty devastating for everyone. So one moment at a party ended 3 lives and devastated countless more, all over something that was probably really, really senseless. Story 2. I used to live on a decent-sized lake, and from my vantage point to the other side, it was probably about 1/4 of a mile. I had my eye on one boat, no idea why, but I had a weird feeling. I kept watching as they got closer to shore with 3 teenage girls behind them on a tube. The driver, who was very drunk, made a correction which in turn swung the girls at high speed toward the shore and right into a steel dock. The 3 girls hit the dock at around 40 miles per hour. One of them passed away on impact. Another was left in a coma and unfortunately died months later. And the survivor was left with permanent physical damage. Not only did this man destroy 2 families' lives in a matter of seconds, he is now in prison for life, and some spectators will never forget the sound of what happened, let alone the horrifying screams from their mothers. It has been a few years, and I have not touched alcohol since. Story 3. When I was living in New England, I met a man at church who had the most bizarre haircut and a very unusual personality. The back half of his hair was a different coarseness and length than the rest, but that was just as noticeable as the fact that he was recently missing a thumb, with scars that looked fresh. He was pretty well off and had a family that everyone knew and respected, 2 daughters, a son, and a charismatic wife. The son was the one who ruined everything for his family with one reckless choice. He had always been the black sheep, partying irresponsibly. Because of his poor behavior, he was grounded from the family European vacation, so he threw a massive party in his family's home while they were gone. The mistake was this. He showed off his father's gold coin collection to impress random people at the party. The party ended, people went home, he cleaned up, and his family returned none the wiser. Later that week, a few people from the party came back uninvited in the middle of the night armed with large blades. They broke in and instantly went to each bedroom to hurt anyone they found. The first bedroom they came across was the youngest daughter's room, and they attacked her while she was asleep. Her confused screams woke the rest of the family. The father ran in to help, the wife called the police, the older daughter eventually jumped from her bedroom window, and the son hid in his closet. The father fought off the attackers with his bare hands, losing his thumb in the process, as well as having chunks of his skull injured by the blows. He never stopped fighting back. Surprised by the resistance they were receiving, the attackers ran without taking the gold they had come for. He chased them down the driveway before collapsing from blood loss. No one died. The youngest daughter now has long scars down her face and head and was nearly mute for years from the psychological trauma. Now she has blossomed in her later teenage years, participating in local school plays. The father had a steel plate installed to complete his skull, over which a skin graft was placed. He is fully functioning. Other than a few social quirks and scars, he is fine. The healing that this family had to go through astounds me, all because of one mistake. They are closer together now, despite all the pain. The wife even affectionately calls her husband, "my favorite butthead," every chance she gets. Story 4. She was unhappy but was not communicating with her husband. Over a couple of months, the mood grew tense. One day she did not come home and said she needed time to think. A few weeks went by and it all came out that she was living with someone else. A man who had spent time in prison, smoking cannabis and drinking constantly, and wanting nothing to do with her husband and 2 children. A few months before, they had been a normal family, but she threw it all away to go party. People separate all the time, but the way she did it was like burning the bridge completely. It was unnecessary. She keeps saying her ex-husband is a great guy and that she is doing this for the kids, but she has only seen them a couple of days in the last 2 months. He might even have to pay her child support since he earns more, while she does absolutely nothing for them. Her friends and family have pretty much disowned her. She destroyed her life because she could not communicate with her husband and decided to tear everything down instead. For those questioning why he would have to pay her money, this is in Florida, and he is trying to get full custody of the kids. But that is very difficult in that state without strong evidence that she is unfit, which he does not have yet. If custody is split 60-40 in his favor, he will still have to pay her child support since his income is higher. He has a lawyer, but divorce law is not easy to navigate. He is weighing his options and hoping to get full custody. Story 5. I grew up in a middle-class family and went to a private Christian elementary school before my parents decided to move to a small-town rural community. Public school was hard for a few years. In some ways, I was just too nice, too much of a dork, too nerdy, and so on. My mom would give my brother and me a ride to school and read to us in the parking lot. Naturally, kids in my fifth grade class started to make fun of me. This went on until my sophomore year in high school, when I started to play in a rock band with a few friends. We were pretty good, and I became popular almost overnight. I also started to take pain pills recreationally with some of the older kids. This started the downhill spiral. In my senior year, I took the SAT and got what at the time was a very good score, the highest of anyone in my high school for a long time. I do not remember exactly why I did not apply to go to any four-year universities, but I did not. Instead, I took pain pills. And the year after graduating, I was introduced to stronger substances by a guy at the pizza shop where I worked. At first, I managed by smoking them, but later I ended up moving to the city, where I made friends with others who were addicted. They introduced me to injections, as well as to a few illegal activities that could make us extra money. Whenever I could not get what I wanted, I would drink copious amounts of wine, sometimes 5-liter boxes in a sitting. It was after one of these drinking sessions that I was arrested for driving under the influence. Of all the poor choices I made during my addiction, I regret that the most. It is such a selfish and destructive choice, and I am profoundly grateful that I never physically hurt anyone. After that, my addiction got harder to manage, and my parents were worried about me. They convinced me to move home, but I kept using for another year before meeting a guy named Jake in a support program who introduced me to coca. I consider my first mix of hero and coca to be the true catalyst for hitting rock bottom. I was in treatment groups to stay in compliance with my court order, but I failed all of them because I was obsessed with using. One day, Jake and I were driving back from the city after buying enough to last the week, or so we thought. When we got home, we realized we had already gone through all of it. We were very out of control when I decided to steal money from the same pizza place where I had worked on and off for almost 5 years. I was a manager by then, so I knew the codes. I also knew I was being videotaped, but I did not care. I needed that money. I waved at the girl on shift, headed upstairs, and stole about $1,500 in petty cash. Jake and I spent most of it in a couple of days, and I lost the rest when I was arrested in the city of Portland, Oregon, the next night. Over the course of the next month, I turned myself in for the theft charge, only to be released to await trial a few days later. Instead of staying clean, I continued to use. I stayed with my dad, who was living an hour south of Portland, to take care of his sick mother. I manipulated him into buying substances for me for a week before I took his credit card and bought a computer with it, which I traded for more substances. I planned on ending my life with the substances I had because I hated what my life had become, hated myself for being unable to stop, and felt overwhelming guilt for what I was doing to my family. I could not see a way out. Luckily, someone called the police on me as I was sitting in my car, drifting in and out of consciousness. I was arrested for possession for the second time in as many months, and this time they did not let me just walk out of jail. After about 12 days, I went to see the judge. My mom and dad were there, and they had hired an attorney who I had spoken with only briefly. Seeing my mom cry in front of the judge when he asked if I had been a rebel growing up was a low point. "No," she said through choked sobs. "He was always a very sweet boy, even after he started using. But he cannot seem to stop." I was given the very fortunate option of an inpatient treatment center in return for pleading guilty to one felony possession charge. I took it and went to treatment. I stayed for the maximum allotted time of 3 months before moving to a halfway house in Portland. I begged my counselor not to make me live in Portland because I was afraid I would not be able to stay clean, but because of my probation, it was the only option. I stayed clean for a few months, got a job waiting tables, and found an apartment, but I relapsed again. I moved back home once more. My parents are long-suffering. I stayed clean for a few months before relapsing one last time. The relapse lasted a few weeks before I lost my job and was ready to end my life again. But my parents reached out one more time and introduced me to a doctor who worked with people struggling with opiates. My mom did insurance billing for a local clinic. He got me started on a medication called Suboxone, also known as buprenorphine. That was almost 6 years ago. I have been clean ever since and am now very happily married and have a job that I like. I have been off probation for years and got my driver's license back in 2014. I am even friends with the guy I robbed all those years ago. The reason I am sharing my story is because I want you to know that if you or someone you love is struggling, if it feels like you have done something to ruin your life completely, it is not the end. There is always hope. If not for the support of my parents, there is no doubt in my mind that I would be dead. They never gave up on me, despite all the evidence that they were wasting their time. Have a little faith. Life is more beautiful and fragile than I ever could have guessed during the worst days of my addiction. Take care of yourselves, be gentle with yourselves, and support each other when you can. There is always hope. Story 6. At Snowshoe, I was skiing with some friends. We were at the top, and I overheard a little girl, around 10 to 12 years old, in blue ski pants and a white puffy coat, complaining about her helmet being uncomfortable. Her dad came over and adjusted it, but she continued to complain. They made a plan. Dad and brother started to go one way, while the girl stayed with her mom. I heard her dad say clearly, "The helmet stays on or you stay in the lodge." As soon as he was out of sight, her mom told her to just toss it in her bag and that she would deal with dad later. The day went on. We skied, wiped out, got soaked, and had fun. Around dinner time, we were at the bottom of the hill, planning one more run before eating. The sun was low, it was cloudy, and the lights were turning on. Suddenly, there was a piercing scream as a young girl in blue pants and a white puffy jacket came flying out of control, straight through the flats, and headfirst into a cement anchor for the lift line. The sound was sickening, and the whole crowd went silent as she hit with a wet thud. Someone behind me vomited. I do not know if she survived. I just know she never moved again, while ski patrol loaded her onto a board with a neck brace. I also do not know if a helmet would have made a difference. But the image of that moment has stayed with me. Story 7. My sister once had a great job, a husband who loved her, and a beautiful baby girl. Then she made a friend at work who convinced her to cheat time from the company, and she was fired. She enrolled in school trying to make her life better, but then met another friend who introduced her to synthetic substances. Later, she was caught shoplifting from the store where I worked. I eventually quit because management made it clear I would never be trusted again. My sister had a second child, but ended up spending the rent money on substances. She and her husband, with their two kids, had to move into a single bedroom at my parents' house. She fell further into substances, first coca, then later methamphetamine. She had a third child during that time. Substances became her entire world. She stole from and lied to everyone, even teaching her kids to cover for her so she could get her next fix. The worst of it came when our 85-year-old grandmother was on vacation. My sister broke into her house, stole thousands of dollars, and even let her dealer live there for a week. They trashed the place and stole precious family items, including the engagement ring my grandfather had given her. He had passed from cancer before I was born. My grandmother is ill now, and it looks like she will pass knowing that her granddaughter did this to her, and without those precious items ever being recovered. My sister shows no remorse. Even when presented with proof, she lies without hesitation. Story 8. I was good friends with a guy who, as I later learned, was into extremely dangerous practices. I do not mean risky behavior like public encounters or thrill-seeking stunts. I mean life-threatening activities involving restriction of breathing and unconsciousness. One night things went terribly wrong. He ended up causing the death of a woman by going too far and not stopping in time. According to him, they had met online, expressed mutual interest in this risky behavior, and met up at a party before going to a hotel. But things escalated dangerously, and the precautions he failed to take led to her losing her life. From her family's point of view, he was a predator, and their daughter would never have engaged in something so reckless. Unfortunately for him, he recorded his encounters, and when prosecutors obtained the videos, it looked damning. There were other recordings of women bound and struggling, and even though he claimed it was consensual role play, it painted a different picture. Everything pointed to my childhood friend being someone who had ignored safety and taken things to a deadly extreme. If convicted, he could face 300 years to life in prison. If acquitted, he would still have to live with what he had done and the stigma forever attached to his name. I know people in safe communities built around trust, responsibility, and consent, and they would be horrified by the reckless disregard he showed. If your interests carry legitimate risk to another person's life, please seek help before you destroy yourself and others. Story 9. I knew a girl I will call Lucy. She had been a smart student throughout middle and high school, always earning good grades, but she surrounded herself with the wrong crowd. She often dated guys who were clearly into substances. A few years after high school, I ran into her at the mall where she was working as a security guard. We caught up, and I learned she had a child, with the father no longer in the picture. Fast forward another 5 years, and Lucy now had 3 more children, each with different fathers. She was posting revealing photos of herself online, mixed with posts about independence and complaints about loyalty. When I reached out to say hello, she asked me for a $600 loan to cover her rent. She was on welfare but had lost food stamp eligibility after trying to cheat the system. I felt bad for her children the most. They had been born into a mess that was not their fault, and it was sad to see someone with so much potential throw it away. It might not have been the fastest downfall, but it was a downfall nonetheless. Story 10. I was working at a pizza place in college when I was 23. My manager, whom I will call MB, was only 2 years older than me. She had struggled with addiction in the past, but had turned her life around when she was promoted. She treated everyone with kindness and respect. Unfortunately, when our store hired a couple of new employees who were involved with substances, they drew MB back into that world. 2 months later, during a night shift, MB collapsed during the dinner rush. She was rushed to the hospital, where doctors determined she had suffered an aneurysm and was brain dead. Her parents flew in from halfway around the world and had to make the heartbreaking decision to let her go. It was the saddest moment I have ever experienced in my working life. She died so young because of her past catching up with her. Afterward, the people who had dragged her back into substances were fired, soon became homeless, and one was even arrested for assaulting an elderly woman. The whole ordeal made me realize just how destructive addiction can be, not only for the person caught in it, but also for everyone around them. Story 11. I threw a house party a couple of years ago. I used to hang around a crowd with pretty loose morals. We all took acid, and my friend, who we will call S, dropped 3 tabs. I do not remember every detail, but I do know S was notorious for not handling trips well. He had suffered a brain injury years ago, which may have contributed. Either way, he loved tripping, but always had a rough time. I was outside smoking when I saw S sitting with a group of people, staring quietly into space. Some of this might be exaggerated since I was also tripping hard, but I swear I could see his veins bulging from his head. He just kept staring with a strained focus, like he was trying to blow something up with his mind. I asked him if he was okay. I was usually level-headed during trips, so I tried to help people through bad ones. He looked at me and said, "My head is going to explode." At first I thought he had just taken too much, but then he started ranting about reading our thoughts, hearing voices, and seeing demons. I tried my hardest to both calm him down and make sense of what was happening. After some soothing words and back pats, we managed to settle him down and ease him out of it. But ever since then, he never seemed quite the same. It might sound like a funny story, but it was not. That night seemed to break something in him mentally, and he has never been entirely right since. Maybe not life-ruining, but I would not be surprised if he has a serious mental break later. He was one of the few genuinely good people in that group, and it breaks my heart to think about it. Do not do substances. They might feel fun, but it is not worth your physical or mental health. Story 12. I worked in a grocery store bakery. A new assistant manager came in and immediately adjusted the workflow to be more efficient, which really just meant dumping all his work on the already overworked evening crew. He constantly complained about the quality of everyone's work and insulted the staff, seemingly just because he could. He especially targeted me because I listened to the wrong talk radio station, and he went out of his way to insult me and give me extra work. One day, shortly before closing, he left the bakery with an empty cake box. When he came back, the box was taped up and looked neat. He set it on the counter and said he had to use the bathroom. I picked it up, and it was heavy, too heavy to be a cake. I called the acting manager and reported theft. They checked the cameras, and sure enough, he had filled the box with expensive steaks. The company pressed charges and prosecuted him fully. They were serious about making examples to stop employee theft. He lost everything overnight, his job, his house, and even his wife. I do not know what happened to him after that, but I doubt it was good. Story 13. I knew a guy and a girl whose lives seemed good until he started putting his friends and drinking before her. She broke up with him, and he was in a rough spot for a while. On her birthday a couple of years later, he called her and asked to grab lunch. Long story short, they got back together. One night, her daughter from a previous relationship was in a car accident. She asked him to watch her two younger boys while she rushed to help, but he was more focused on going out with his buddies. The kids were left alone for 2 hours. When she returned, she packed his things and tossed them outside. A few weeks later, she discovered she was pregnant. He wanted nothing to do with the child, so she became a single mother of four. Without her support, he spiraled into bars and ended up with a woman who had worked as a promotions model. 17 years later, he was practically living with her in a rough neighborhood with their two kids. One was 14, already dealing marijuana, breaking into houses, and repeatedly under house arrest. And the other was 10, stuck enduring his older brother's bullying. Their relationship was toxic, filled with constant fights. Meanwhile, the original girl raised her four kids on her own and eventually found love again. She remarried in June, and now two of her kids are married with children of their own. The third has a son, and I am the fourth. Story 14. Back in grade school, an acquaintance we will call Mike loosened the brakes on another kid's bicycle during recess. The bike had been locked at the rack in the area we used for outside time. I do not know if it was malicious or just dumb kid behavior, but the bike belonged to one of the smartest kids in our grade. Later that day, the boy rode down a steep hill toward the library. At the stop sign, a car was waiting, and when he tried to brake, nothing happened. He slammed into the back of the car. He had a helmet, but he still suffered brain damage. Afterward, he was never the same. He became slow and sometimes disruptive, doing odd things in class, like making noises in the middle of lessons, thinking it was funny. His mom, who used to be one of the toughest volunteer monitors at school, became one of the kindest people we knew. Just grateful her son was alive, even though he was permanently changed. Nobody ever told his family about the brake loosening, and I have thought about it for over 20 years. But telling them now would only serve my own closure. His life was permanently altered, and it is something I have carried with me ever since. Story 15. My roommates and I had planned to go for a drive and smoke before celebrating the last day of finals at college. It was a nice May day, but we decided to stay home instead. Already lazy and relaxed. The windows were open, the screen door was unlocked, and we were sitting around. Suddenly, we heard rustling in the bushes beneath the window. Looking out, we saw a man hiding there. As we were trying to process what was happening, we heard sirens getting closer. Two police cars turned the corner, and the man bolted straight into our house. He ran through the living room, past the four of us, into the kitchen, and down the basement stairs. We were stunned. Moments later, the police burst into our living room with guns drawn, shouting, "Where did he go?" We pointed downstairs. They ran down, caught him, and dragged him out. Turns out he had just robbed a bank two blocks away. There we sat, stoned, with everything out in plain view, while a dozen police officers surrounded us. A detective came over, got our names, and asked what happened. We told him the story. He listened, asked a few more questions, then stood up. I thought we were going to prison, but instead he smiled and said, "You should clean up that mess on the table. Have a good day, fellas." And with that, he and his team walked out. leaving us speechless. Story 16. In June of 2016, a girl we will call Megan was 19 and spending the day at the lake with her boyfriend. She decided to drink heavily and then chose to drive home. She made it home, but she had left her boyfriend at the lake, who was also drunk. He was angry and demanded that she come back to pick him up. On her way back, she crossed the center line on the local highway and hit the car I was a passenger in head-on. No one died, but she hospitalized me, the two other girls in my car, and herself. In the time following the accident, I heard that her life completely crumbled. She attempted to contest her aggravated driving under the influence charge on the grounds that her blood test was taken 3 hours after the accident, during which she spent the entire time in hospital custody. The test showed a blood alcohol level of 0.14, and her case was thrown out of court. She then pled guilty, landing herself in jail for a few weeks along with probation, fines, license revocation, and community service. Her car was totaled, she lost her job because of her jail time, and later she was evicted. All three of us who were injured maxed out her liability and injury coverage and are now pursuing her personal assets for damages and suffering. I wish I could say I felt bad that her life was ruined, but I suffered a traumatic brain injury, a broken hand, a broken jaw, facial injuries, and lasting neck and back damage. She ruined our lives, and now all three of us will live in pain for the rest of our lives. Because she decided to get behind the wheel while intoxicated, she managed to destroy not only her own life, but ours as well. There is no excuse for driving under the influence in this day and age with services like Lyft and Uber. Do not drink and drive. Story 17. My ex-stepmom married my dad in 2007. At first, she was a wonderful person. She had a good job. She was caring. She cooked every night, and she came with two cats, which we considered a bonus. But over the years, she started to change, and her mental health issues began to show. Many times, she talked about wanting to move away and never come back, taking my dad with her and leaving me and my sister behind. Eventually, she spent nearly all her time in her room, only leaving for work and dinner. She went through cycles of gaining and losing weight and eventually became verbally abusive toward my sister and me. She yelled at us for every little thing, the game controller left out, a sock on the floor, anything. Finally, my dad had enough. He kicked her out, though he still helped her by renting her a small apartment and paying the first month's rent. It later came out that she was smoking cannabis, using coca, and probably harder substances too, which only added to the reasons my dad left her. Around that time, he went to Hawaii for 2 weeks just to get away because he could not handle the stress anymore. For those 2 weeks, we thought he might be gone for good, but he eventually called my sister to say he was coming home and explained everything. We forgave him, but it was painful to think we had lost our dad. About a month or two later, my ex-stepmom was evicted, borrowed money from her family, got another apartment, and then got caught up in a shootout after she started selling substances with her new dealer boyfriend. I am not sure what exactly happened after that. The last I heard, she was living with six people somewhere in Brooklyn under uncertain conditions. What hurt most was that she took her two cats with her, as well as my dog, which had been my sister's graduation gift in eighth grade. We loved him, but he is likely gone now. I can only imagine she either put him down or sold him for money. Story 18. My childhood friends and I had a tradition every Super Bowl Sunday. We would watch the first half, play a touch football game in the street during halftime, and then have boxing matches after the game. We were all best friends and teammates, and like many high school athletes, we partied a lot and experimented with substances. Growing up in California, they were easy to find. During our junior year after the big game, we continued the tradition of friendly boxing matches. My buddy, we will call him Jim, stepped up for his fight. It started off fine, but with one swing, he dislocated his shoulder and tore his rotator cuff. We had no idea how serious it was. He took Vicodin, smoked some cannabis, and brushed it off. Weeks later, he was still taking the painkillers. What followed was years of abuse, eventually hero use and full addiction. He lost a lot of weight, pushed away family and friends, and went from one destructive relationship to another. He tried rehab once and even attempted to manage with methadone, but nothing stuck. It was only when he could no longer hold a job that he finally sought real help. Jim has always been one of the most honest and genuine people I know. Even while addicted, he refused to steal. He always said, "I may be an addict, but I am not a thief." Eventually, he begged his father for help. His dad paid for his rehab, and he has been clean for 5 years. He is now heavier, has a daughter, and is engaged to the love of his life. He has come a long way, though he will never get those 6 lost years back. He is still one of my best friends. Story 19. I came out as gay almost 2 years ago. Soon after, I lost my job working with kids at a residential treatment center. I had been the team leader and trainer for new staff and foster families for 17 years. But within a month of coming out, I was fired. I started a new career as a truck driver, and after 6 months, I became an over-the-road instructor. My second student refused to stay off his phone while driving, even after I repeatedly warned him that it was against the law. He tried to fight me and hurled insults. I finally had enough, got out of the truck, and called my company. He then threatened to steal the fully loaded truck, so I called the police. They said they could not do anything. My company told me to let him drive to the nearest terminal since I could not legally drive for another 4 hours. Back on the road, he was still on his phone, swerving and brake checking the truck. I asked him to pull over for 30 minutes before calling 911 again. Once more, I was told nothing could be done. Finally, I warned my trainee that if he continued threatening me and putting my life in danger, I would defend myself. I ended up spending the night in jail, arrested for verbal assault. I was fired 2 days later, even though I had everything recorded on video. Before I came out, I had never been fired or had any problems with the law. Now I am struggling to find work, on the verge of losing my car and house, and battling depression and suicidal thoughts. Story 20. My friend had a girlfriend who was frankly very irresponsible. She failed school, had no qualifications, but was popular, and he was devoted to her. He bought her a house, a dog, and a car. They planned to get married and have a child. Then she went on vacation to Germany to see family. There she met her cousin's friends, all women, and ended up being unfaithful with them. Images of the encounters surfaced online, showing her in compromising situations. My friend saw them but kept quiet, hoping to move on since he still cared for her. When she returned, she was distant, withholding affection. Months later, he confronted her with the images, and she admitted she no longer wanted to be with him and identified differently than before. He ended things immediately, taking back the house, the car, and the dog. Her mother, very religious, disowned her when she learned the truth. With nowhere to go, she spent her last money on a plane ticket back to Germany, only to realize she had made a mistake. She eventually returned with nothing left. Around this time, my friend won the lottery. He redesigned his home, bought new cars, and was living well. She showed up at his door, begging to reconcile, but he turned her away, not knowing she was unaware of his win. She had no options, returned to Germany, and was later detained by the police for possession before being deported back to the United Kingdom. Now she lives in a hostel, broke, without family support. Her father imprisoned in Spain for fraud. She once had everything but lost it all because of reckless choices. Story 21. This story is not so much bad as it is sad. It happened sometime around 2006 to 2008. I cannot remember exactly when because I was about 11 at the time. I had a friend in elementary and middle school who lived within 2 miles of me, with a pharmacy in between our houses. She was about 12, her little brother was about 9, and their mother was around 40. One day they were at the pharmacy picking up a few things and walking back to their car in the parking lot. As they walked, the mother suddenly pushed both of her children out of the way. My friend hit her head on the sidewalk and woke up to the sound of her brother screaming and crying. What had happened was that a car had slammed on the gas while backing out of a parking spot, heading straight toward them. The mother's quick reaction saved her children, but the car pinned her to the wall of the pharmacy, and she died within minutes. The little brother saw the entire thing and has struggled with depression and trauma ever since. My friend suffered a concussion, lost her mother that day, and has never been the same. The saddest part is that the driver was not drunk or high. She was an 80-year-old woman who pressed too hard on the gas pedal while driving a car she was unfamiliar with. I do not know exactly what happened with the police afterward, but the tragedy left my friend permanently changed. Not all bad things happen because of bad people. Sometimes they just happen. Story 22. This is a story I have told before, but it always feels raw and fresh. My cousin Bryce had just finished high school. His girlfriend, his first love, named Taylor, was due to graduate the following year. Bryce loved her more than anything. They shared the same interests and connected deeply, both emotionally and intellectually. Shortly before Taylor's graduation, her father told her that Bryce was not worth her time, that he had no real direction. Her mother, Lucy, did not know about this conversation and actually liked Bryce, even being close with his mom. But Taylor listened to her father and suddenly broke up with Bryce. Understandably, he was devastated. He tried to understand what he had done wrong, and she eventually told him the truth before slowly cutting off contact. A deep depression set in. He started drinking heavily, then smoking cannabis, and eventually abusing Xanax. His parents placed him in rehab. He completed the program, but soon fell back into old habits. His personality began to change. He was angry or sad most of the time. One night, he and his best friend went to a party. He did not drink, but was obviously under the influence of something. When it was time to leave, he was stumbling and struggling even to turn the keys. They decided to sleep it off in the car. Police were called to the party and saw them in the car. Concerned, they checked to make sure he would not drive. They gave him a breathalyzer, which showed zero, and his friend also tested clean. Still, the officers suspected substance use and lectured him about the dangers. Bryce became defensive and balled his fists as if to fight. His friends stepped in to hold him back. Bryce was arrested and later charged. When his family found out, they were furious and kicked him out of their home. Another family member took him in. She had experience dealing with addiction in her own children and tried to help, taking away his keys, license, and wallet until he sobered up. Eventually, he went back home. Then one Sunday evening, he stayed at his best friend's house. He convinced his friend to let him buy cannabis, but he also bought Xanax and other substances. The next morning, his friend found him dead from an overdose. Afterward, his mother read through his social media posts. They were full of pain, depression, and anger. He had even written things like, "I don't think I will live much longer." Substances and alcohol had become his only escape from heartbreak, and counseling and rehab had never been enough. His death tore through our family like a storm. His mother became distant and bitter. The family member who had tried to help him was pushed to the edge, blaming his best friend and his ex, even calling them murderers. She turned to alcohol herself and withdrew from everyone. His death created ripples of grief and anger that continue to divide and damage my family to this day. Story 23. This happened to an acquaintance of mine, and while I did not witness the event itself, I saw the aftermath. After the first dot-com crash, many skilled tech workers in their late 20s and early 30s found themselves unemployed, too expensive to hire in the bear market, too skilled to take lower-paying jobs. This guy was one of them. He ended up bartending and working as kitchen staff, sleeping during the day and hanging out at night with friends who paid for his drinks. It seemed to work for a while. Then one of his old friends got a good job when the economy started to rebound and helped him land a highly lucrative tech job, his first in nearly 5 years. He quit his service jobs, sold his house at the bottom of the real estate market, unfortunately, and moved 200 miles to start his new career. On the very first day, he saw a woman walk into the office and sent his buddy a series of racist and cyst messages about her over work chat. His friend was working on a project with their mutual boss, who saw the comments. The new hire was fired immediately on his first day. Now he had no job, no house, and was crashing on his friend's couch, nearly getting them both in trouble. He had maybe 6 months of cash left and had effectively blacklisted himself from the industry. Last I heard, nearly a decade later, he was living in an RV, driving for Uber, and trying to get back into bartending. Story 24. I was friends with a girl who was the most compassionate person I had ever met. Her mom was strict and focused heavily on school, so she did not hang out with friends much, but she was a straight-A student and incredibly talented with plants. By senior year, she started dating a guy who gave me bad vibes, but she seemed happy. After graduation, she became pregnant, and they planned to marry. I attended her baby shower, but after that, we lost contact. 3 years later, we reconnected and coincidentally became neighbors. She was no longer the same girl I knew. Her husband believed he was literally a fox, running on all fours, barking, and claiming he was trapped in a human body. He could not hold a job. Together, they had 2 children who were neglected. He believed children could clean themselves like animals, so they were rarely bathed or clothed properly. Neither parent had a license or steady income, surviving on assistance and the kindness of others. She, once grounded and intelligent, now believed his delusions and had developed a compulsion to invent illnesses, both for herself and for her children. At one point, she begged doctors to perform unnecessary surgery on her 5-year-old, who was otherwise healthy and active. Their home became a hoarder's den filled with animals they did not feed. An entire litter of kittens died of starvation under their care. Their daughter, raised as though she were an animal, only barked and growled because that was how her father treated her. The family frequently fabricated stories about stalkers to justify moving whenever they failed to pay rent. Child Protective Services had been called countless times by me, the neighbors, and others, but nothing ever changed. Then a few months ago, they abandoned their rented house, leaving behind their belongings and the animals they had neglected. I do not know where they are now or how the children are doing. Story 25. This story is about a guy I went to high school with. We were in the same class, though we did not talk much. He was popular, good-looking, and from a wealthy family, attending our private school. During his second or third year, he went to study in another state. There, after getting into an argument with a teacher, he stabbed him in the leg. Somehow he avoided serious consequences, possibly thanks to family connections, and eventually came back home. I had forgotten about him until, about a year ago, I saw his name in the news. He had murdered his uncle, his uncle's wife, and their 2 young children in Spain. Reports said he dismembered them, put their remains into bags, and then flew home. Neighbors later complained about a terrible smell, leading police to the discovery. Apparently, he had been living with the family until recently, but they moved away because of his obsessive behavior toward his uncle's wife. When he tracked them down, he killed them all, supposedly saying it would be too cruel to kill just his uncle. He is now in prison in Spain. Looking back after the stabbing incident, I figured he was troubled, but I never imagined he was capable of such horrors. I learned the full story from the same friend who once had a crush on him in high school, a fact she no longer wants anyone to bring up. Story 26. When I first started playing Xbox, I met a group of 4 kids my age. They quickly became some of my closest friends. We would play zombies on Call of Duty Black Ops for hours every day. Over time, we lost touch. Then one day I saw one of them, let's call him A, come online for the first time in a year. I invited him to a party, asked how everyone was doing, and he said things were okay. Then another one of our friends, B, joined. A and B were talking when B said, so what's going to happen now that he died? A replied, I'm not sure yet. I was shocked and asked what was going on. A then told me he had killed one of our other friends, C. I did not believe him at first, but when I looked it up, it was true. According to A, he, B, C, and another kid we will call D were hanging out in A's basement late at night before going fishing. D had brought a pistol. They were messing with the gun, which they thought was unloaded, when A got a phone call. He handed the gun back to D and walked away. When he came back, he picked up the gun, thinking it was still empty, pointed it at C and pulled the trigger. Instead of clicking, it fired, striking C in the head. D panicked, grabbed the gun, and ran, while the others sat frozen in shock. Police arrived and arrested A, D, and D's mother for giving a minor access to a firearm. C did not die instantly. He was left in a vegetative state for several hours before his parents made the decision to let him go. Surprisingly, A did not serve jail time. He spent a few months in a boys' home, and that was it. News reports claimed it was a game of Russian roulette gone wrong, but I do not believe that was the case. Hearing this directly from A was devastating, even though I had only known them online. I still talk to A now and then, and he seems to be doing well, but I cannot imagine the guilt he must carry every day. Story 27. Since elementary school, I had been good friends with a girl I will call Danny. At the time, I was somewhat of a misfit, and she was one of the few people who accepted me. We played video games, had snowball fights, and spent time together like normal kids. As we grew older and went into middle and high school, we drifted apart. We were not unfriendly, just less connected. Danny started smoking cannabis at a very young age. While I do not think cannabis is inherently harmful, starting so young was a red flag. Soon after, she picked up drinking, also before high school, and began spending time with much older men who gave her alcohol and substances. Eventually, I heard that she was trading essay for substances as young as 12 or 13. It broke my heart to see someone I had once been so close with going down that path. I tried talking to her, not lecturing, just trying to scare her away from it. She brushed it off, saying she was fine and that it was cool. Not long after, she even offered S to me and a few other friends for money. Some classmates took her up on the offer, and that is when things went downhill quickly. By high school, she was using a wide variety of substances: coca, PCP, bath salts, methamphetamine, anything she could get. She looked terrible, even as a freshman. I was amazed she advanced through school at all. She barely attended class, and her grades were awful. At one point, we ended up in the same physics class. She disappeared for 9 months, and I later learned she had been in rehab for meth the entire time. She eventually graduated, a year late, and I hoped things were looking up. She even got engaged while her boyfriend was in jail. When I came back home during college, I ran into her at a gas station. She was a shadow of her former self. She looked like a zombie, worn down from years of abuse and toxic relationships. She had been homeless, had multiple abortions, and still could not quit substances. The people she was with gave me nasty looks, and I excused myself quickly. Later that summer, I heard she had been in a car accident. She was not wearing a seatbelt, and while she survived with only a broken arm and bruises, she looked utterly defeated. I could not get the image of her face out of my head. It was as if life had completely crushed her spirit. I do not know where her parents were during all of this. She said she was adopted from Kazakhstan, but I never knew if it was true. Her parents had seemed like normal, stable, middle-class people. At some point, they kicked her out, and things only got worse. Had she stuck with just cannabis, she might have had a normal life. Not perfect, but with the same potential as the rest of us. Instead, she is trapped in a cycle of addiction, with no stability, no family, and no hope. It is heartbreaking. Stay away from substances. Even with professional help, most people never truly recover. Story 28. There was a girl I grew up with my entire life. We went to church together, and our parents were close friends. She was deeply religious and one of the kindest people I had ever met. She went on multiple mission trips to Haiti and dreamed of becoming a missionary there permanently. She was smart, funny, and genuinely cared about others. If someone was struggling, she could never be happy until she helped them. Just weeks before starting her senior year, she pulled out in front of a 3/4-ton diesel pickup on a 2-lane highway. She was on the phone with a friend trying to find their new house, with another friend riding in the car. The truck hit the passenger side at highway speed. Both girls were airlifted. The passenger survived with only a broken hip and a concussion and recovered fully within weeks. But my friend was not so lucky. She endured multiple brain surgeries, had part of her skull removed, and spent months in an induced coma. For over a year, she was moved between hospitals in different states. Now, more than a year and a half later, she is back home, but she is not the same person. She can breathe on her own, but that is about it. She lies with her eyes open, moving them around but never really seeing. Her family posts updates, but it is heartbreaking to see her like that. It is painful to walk into their home and see someone who was once so full of life reduced to that state. She is a shell of the vibrant, loving person she once was, all because of a split-second mistake. That is why people say to look both ways and stop completely before pulling out. Things happen fast at 60 miles per hour. Please do not be careless. Story 29. I was lazy in high school, but I still kept good grades. After graduation, I got my first possession charge for cannabis. I completed pretrial intervention and had it expunged. I went to college, but not long after, I caught another simple possession charge while heading home one weekend. I accepted the charge and kept going. Later, on another trip with friends, I was charged again. This time, the judge gave me a conditional discharge, and the charges were dropped. Then, when my college roommate was arrested for selling, the police found a pound in our shared room. It belonged to him, and he admitted it. But I still ended up with another possession charge because I gave the officers a half ounce of my personal stash. I bailed my roommate out, and we paid the fines by selling more. Then I was charged with driving under the influence. I paid the fines and went to classes, but my license was not reinstated. I drove anyway. Less than a year later, I was pulled over drunk without a license. The prosecutor reduced it to the lowest possible charge because I refused both the breath test and the field sobriety test. Still, I lost my license for 2 years, had an ignition interlock device installed, and was required to carry high-risk insurance. I even spent 4 days in a medium-security work prison. That was the wake-up call. I realized how badly I had messed up. I asked my parents if I could move home and start fresh. They agreed. I got a job making $7.75 an hour. 4 years later, I am making $50,000 a year, salaried, with the same company. I am still far from perfect. I still drink. But I never drive under the influence anymore, and I do not drink if I have to work the next day. There is always time to improve yourself. You just have to commit. Story 30. My mom's best friend had 3 daughters. We were like extended family, always exchanging Christmas cards and visiting. The oldest was bold, the middle one, my age, was quiet, and the youngest was outgoing. The middle daughter was diagnosed with diabetes, and since the family struggled financially, she relied on state assistance for her medication. As teenagers, all 3 girls became pregnant around the same time. The oldest had a boy, and the other 2 had girls. They all used substances, starting mostly with cannabis, which I did not think was too harmful. But the middle daughter's health grew worse as she neglected her diabetes. Eventually, all 3 sisters got into methamphetamine. The oldest went to rehab with her partner, leaving their son with his grandparents. She cycled in and out of treatment, but still struggles today. The middle sister, who had always been anxious, rarely left the house and depended on her parents to do basic tasks. She switched from meth to ecstasy, but kept declining. The youngest cut ties with the family, moved in with her boyfriend's family, got clean, and seemed to be doing better. The middle sister spiraled. She ignored her diabetes, spent all her money on substances, and relied on her parents to raise her daughter. She was constantly in the hospital. Her parents visited her often, but she refused to take care of herself. I was angry at her then, feeling like she had given up and abandoned her daughter. In reality, I think I had already started grieving for her. She had been one of my closest friends growing up, but the girl I knew was gone. Doctors warned her repeatedly that the substances were killing her. She stopped getting out of bed for anything but food, ignored her child, and wasted away. One day after using again with a friend, she collapsed. She was rushed to the hospital, but this time there was nothing they could do. She died at 22 years old. It was heartbreaking to watch someone with so much potential waste away like that. Her daughter lost her mother, her family lost their child, and I lost the friend I grew up with. Story 31. Maybe not as fast as other stories, but this one always stuck with me. There was a couple on my parents' street who were constantly fighting, screaming at each other in public. They had a little boy, about 5 years old. When they finally divorced, the mother moved out, and the father got custody of the boy every other weekend. At first, he only smoked cannabis when his son was not around, but eventually he stopped hiding it and lit up even when the boy was there. A few months later, it escalated. Crack, coca, hero, anything he could get. His son was left outside all day, unsupervised, barely clothed, and without friends to play with. My parents, who worked in healthcare, would give the boy food and keep an eye on him when they could. But when the father found out, he started threatening them. They were just about to call child services when the man was caught selling substances out of his house. He was arrested for multiple crimes and locked up. The boy went to live with his mother permanently. I never saw either of them again, but that man managed to wreck his life and nearly his son's astonishingly fast. Story 32. I had this friend whose life was already in rough shape, but what happened next buried him further. We used to hang out in his garage, smoke weed, play video games, listen to music. One night, while stoned, I jokingly pitched the idea of breaking into the local grocery store where he used to work, ripping out the safe, and stealing the money. It was just stoner talk. I had no intention of doing it. But later, he developed a serious hero habit, and desperation drove him to actually try. One night, he and another addict friend broke into the store after hours. Supposedly, according to the police report, his friend was on the phone ratting him out while he smashed a window and tried to grab whatever he could. At first, I thought it was a rumor. Then I saw the boarded-up window myself, and my neighbor told me they had seen him sprinting away before being tackled and arrested by the police. I felt guilty knowing I had planted the seed of the idea, but I never thought he would go through with it. I had only been joking. He ended up destroying himself by actually doing it. Story 33. My brother-in-law worked on the roadshow crew for a regional circus company. The pay was not great, but he liked the traveling and the wild, eccentric people he partied with. It was a waste of potential, though, because he was book smart, but never applied himself. His job was setting up the trolleys that rolled through cheesy haunted houses and carnival rides. One weekend, a ride malfunctioned and stopped in the middle of a dark prop area. He went inside to figure out the problem and saw that one side of the track had come loose, tilting the cart forward. As he tried to help the riders off safely, a little girl got separated from her mother. Panicked, she ran in the dark, slipped, and fell under the track. My brother-in-law reached under the tilted cart to pull her out, but the pressure shifted the track just enough to free it. The cart, thousands of pounds heavy, rolled forward and crushed his lower back, pinning him between the track and the buggy for almost a minute. Other customers rushed in and lifted it off him. Paramedics arrived shortly after and said they had not seen an injury that brutal since 1998, when The Undertaker threw mankind off Hell in a Cell and he fell 16 feet through an announcer's table. It was a freak accident that nearly cost him his life. Story 34. I have an uncle who always seems to choose the worst partners. One girlfriend faked seizures for attention, even continuing the act after EMTs arrived. Another, who had several children of her own, left him for a homeless man while my uncle was working and paying most of the bills. But his latest disaster was with a woman I will call R. R had lupus and likely some psychological issues. My uncle, being soft-hearted, let her and her child live with him. She had a prescription for Ambien, and one night she took some and tried to keep functioning. She cracked an egg, dropped it in the sink, left the water running, and then passed out on the couch. Hours later, my uncle came home to a flooded apartment and an angry neighbor. Unsurprisingly, he was evicted. Instead of walking away, he kept R around. Soon he was living in his truck. Though it was paid off, he took out a loan against it to help cover expenses, giving some of the money to R under the assumption she would pay him back. Of course, she did not. She wasted the money with reckless choices and shady friends. Now my uncle was no longer a truck owner with some stability. He was homeless, saddled with debt, and tied down by her chaos. For a while, he showered and cleaned up at my place before finally leaving town to live with relatives in rural Nevada. R eventually cyber-stalked him and harassed him even after he cut ties. In the end, he went from having his own home and a truck paid off to being homeless, in debt, and emotionally drained, all because of one terrible relationship. Story 35. When I was in school to join the Operating Engineers Union, there was a girl named Brittany. She was unfriendly toward the other women, but acted nice to the men. The program was a huge opportunity: free room, board, and training, plus guaranteed entry into a middle-class income with pension, benefits, and vacation once you started working. All you had to do was follow the rules. Brittany decided to sneak off with a married crane operator who was there for continuing education. They went to a liquor store, then back to his dorm room, strictly off-limits to women. Security caught them in the act, and both lost their dorm privileges. The crane operator only had to stay another week, so it barely affected him. But Brittany had no money for a hotel and no car, so her father had to drive 3 hours in the middle of the night to pick her up. She lost her place in the apprenticeship and with it, an entire career. The guys in her group even admitted she was a natural on the machines. One poor choice destroyed her future. Story 36. My father's downfall wasn't quick. It was a long, slow collapse. He is a narcissistic man who emotionally abused me, my brother, and my mother for years without consequence. He cared only about money and S, driving a BMW he could not afford, buying a house beyond our means, draining our savings in the stock market, and even stealing from his children's accounts. My mom finally divorced him in the summer of 2016, which triggered his unraveling. At the time, I was so manipulated that I believed he was the victim, but I eventually saw the truth. Within a year, he told me I was a disappointment, cursed at me, and called me a loser. He has been unemployed for most of the last decade, has no friends, no money, and no relationship with his children. He even gave up the family dog because his new girlfriend from an online dating site didn't want it. Meanwhile, my mom, brother, and I have flourished since the divorce. We are happier, healthier, and free of his negativity, which has completely consumed him. His own family still tries to excuse his behavior, saying life is stressful for him, But the truth is, he destroyed everything through arrogance, selfishness, and refusal to change. Instead of rebuilding his life, he let it collapse around him.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.